2. The Master's Attitude. When Jesus was arrested, he knew that his work on earth in the likeness of mortal flesh was finished. He fully understood the sort of death he would die, and he was little concerned with the details of his so-called trials. Before the Sanhedrist court, Jesus declined to make replies to the testimony of perjured witnesses. There was but one question, which would always elicit an answer, whether asked by friend or foe, and that was the one concerning the nature and divinity of his mission on earth. When asked if he were the Son of God, he unfailingly made reply. He steadfastly refused to speak when in the presence of the curious and wicked Herod. Before Pilate he spoke only when he thought that Pilate or some other sincere person might be helped to a better knowledge of the truth by what he said. Jesus had taught his apostles the uselessness of casting their pearls before swine, and he now dared to practice what he had taught. His conduct at this time exemplified the patient submission of the human nature, coupled with the majestic silence and solemn dignity of the divine nature. He was altogether willing to discuss with Pilate any question related to the political charges brought against him, any question which he recognized as belonging to the governor's jurisdiction. Jesus was convinced that it was the will of the Father that he submit himself to the natural and ordinary course of human events, just as every other mortal creature must, and therefore he refused to employ even his purely human powers of persuasive eloquence to influence the outcome of the machinations of his socially near-sighted and spiritually blinded fellow mortals. Although Jesus lived and died on Urantia, his whole human career, from first to last, was a spectacle designed to influence and instruct the entire universe of his creation and unceasing upholding. These short-sighted Jews clamored unseemly for the Master's death, while he stood there in awful silence, looking upon the death scene of a nation, his earthly father's own people. Jesus had acquired that type of human character which could preserve its composure and assert its dignity in the face of continued and gratuitous insult. He could not be intimidated. When first assaulted by the servant of Annas, he had only suggested the propriety of calling witnesses who might duly testify against him. From first to last, in his so-called trial before Pilate, the onlooking celestial hosts could not refrain from broadcasting to the universe the depiction of the scene of Pilate on trial before Jesus. When before Caiaphas, and when all the perjured testimony had broken down, Jesus did not hesitate to answer the question of the chief priest, thereby providing in his own testimony that which they desired as a basis for convicting him of blasphemy. The Master never displayed the least interest in Pilate's well-meant but half-hearted efforts to effect his release. He really pitied Pilate, and sincerely endeavored to enlighten his darkened mind. He was wholly passive to all the Roman governor's appeals to the Jews to withdraw their criminal charges against him. Throughout the whole sorrowful ordeal, he bore himself with simple dignity and unostentatious majesty. He would not so much as cast reflections of insincerity upon his would-be murderers when they asked if he were King of the Jews. With but little qualifying explanation, he accepted the designation, knowing that, while they had chosen to reject him, he would be the last to afford them real national leadership, even in a spiritual sense. Jesus said little during these trials, but he said enough to show all mortals the kind of human character man can perfect in partnership with God, and to reveal to all the universe the manner in which God can become manifest in the life of the creature, when such a creature truly chooses to do the will of the Father, thus becoming an active son of the living God. His love for ignorant mortals is fully disclosed by his patience and great self-possession in the face of the jeers, blows, and buffetings of the coarse soldiers and the unthinking servants. He was not even angry when they blindfolded him and, derisively striking him in the face, exclaimed, "Prophesy to us who it was that struck you." Pilate spoke more truly than he knew when, after Jesus had been scourged, he presented him before the multitude, exclaiming, "Behold the man!" Indeed, the fear-ridden Roman governor little dreamed that at just that moment the universe stood at attention, gazing upon this unique scene of its beloved sovereign thus subjected in humiliation to the taunts and blows of his darkened and degraded mortal subjects. And as Pilate spoke, there echoed throughout all Nebadon, "Behold God and man." Throughout a universe, untold millions have ever since that day continued to behold that man, while the God of Havona, the supreme ruler of the universe of universes, accepts the man of Nazareth as the satisfaction of the ideal of the mortal creatures of this local universe of time and space. In his matchless life, he never failed to reveal God to man. Now, in these final episodes of his mortal career, and in his subsequent death, he made a new and touching revelation of man to God.